You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to the Ready Room, show number 75, Tracking Through the IMUD. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Greg Harbin. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including new additions to Star Trek Las Vegas 2013, Starfleet threads for your top and bottom, a new way to carry around your data, and we play with the holiday update to Chateauatry. Then in the feature, we're joined by Drew Stewart and Jenny Zell to discuss the classic TOS episode, IMUD. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Greg. How are you this week?
Chris, I am doing wonderfully. It was a beautiful Sunday here in Seattle. I went downtown, saw some friends, feel refreshed, ready to go. Very excited to talk about Star Trek today. How about you? How are you doing?
I'm hanging in there. Getting a little bit sick, actually, unfortunately. So hopefully my voice will sound okay today. It's either the common cold or it's a case of Rigelian fever. I'm not sure which one. And they both sounded bad to me, but then Colin reminded me of what happens when you get Rigelian fever. Apparently McCoy had it in Shore Leave, and actually that might not be so bad. So I'm kind of hoping for that one.
Oh man, yeah, there's some dangerous things going on. I heard someone in Russia wiped their nose on the day as it passed, and then someone in Ireland got sick later that day. This is all on Twitter this week, but I never knew that you could actually catch a cold that way. So maybe you caught it as it was coming all the way around.
That's probably what it is. I think so. Well, why don't we go ahead and just jump into the show today? And we haven't done a mailbag segment in quite a long time. And we did have two items today that I wanted to include. Now, the first one is from our listener, Raduz. And Raduz actually had a question for me. And that was how to find the very earliest episodes of The Ready Room, because I know we don't quite yet have the kind of index page that we would like to have for the show. We're working on that. It takes a bit of time for us to get it together. But in iTunes, you can only see the last 30 episodes of The Ready Room, and that's kind of a limitation of our hosting, the way that we have our RSS feeds set up right now. So if you want to find the oldest versions of The Ready Room, there is a short link for every show. You can go to trek.fm/trr1 or trr2, etc., and that'll get you to the show page. And right now at the bottom of the page, there's a tiny link that says download audio file. And if you right click that, you can actually grab the same file that you would get from iTunes. And I'm going to work on getting a button up at the top to make it easier for you to download that. But Raduz, that is how you do it. And I'm sure there may be some other listeners who have been wondering.
And another great way, of course, is to follow the @TrekFM account on Twitter, because we're always posting, what do you call it, Ready Room Redux, where you post a link to an old show that was really good and that you can just click the link right there and check out an old show. It's a good way because you might not just want to go through and listen to 1, 2, 3, 4 in order. And you might want to just pick out, 17. Although 17, that was a pretty good show. So the Trek FM account's always sending out these great links, and Ready Room links is definitely one of them. That if people are looking for older episodes, that's a great place to start.
Yeah, that's right. It's the Ready Room Rewind.
And yes, that's right.
Yeah, get you to some of the old shows. So that's one. And Greg, we also had some mail from our loyal listener, Mares. Renee Roberts, and what did she tell us this time?
Yes, well, she says, "Thanks for another wonderful show. I'm thrilled that you would like to see me in a feature film. My agents would be in touch. Dax is a wonderful character, the only one I've heard of who truly had 9 lives. Well, okay, 9 hosts, but that's about the same. Dax integrating a repressed host personality rather reminds me of Vulcans reintegrating repressed memories, as we see with Tuvok in Flashback and T'Pol in The Seventh. Though by no means stellar, Equilibrium was enjoyable and had a message that holds true today. As Jadzia says, in order to know who you are, you have to know who you've been. Well, I have to go comb my mane. So till next week, live long and prosper.
Okay. Pause. So, of course, Renee is writing as her alter ego of Maress.
Yes.
In that one. So this is from a few shows back, our Equilibrium show. And all I can really say here is that, as she says, the quote from Jadzia, it explains why I have those weekly seances. I'm just trying to, you know who I've been,
right,
so that I can move forward.
I did. You know, I'm just about done with season 7 of DS9. And while I'm not enjoying season 7 as much as I thought I did, I'm actually enjoying the character of Ezri more than I thought.
Are you and really? Maybe that's interesting, because based on your iMessages, I didn't get that impression.
I'm coming around on her. And the thing is, they keep forcing her into the plots. But I do like that we're seeing her deal with, you know, being a new Dax. I kind of wish they'd done it earlier, you know, make it season 5 where there's a new Dax. So they had more time and it didn't feel quite so rushed. But she really is growing on me. I still have prep problems with it, though.
You know, that's an interesting point, since we're talking about Dax here in Maress's letter. Like you said, yeah, if they had killed off Jadzia and had a new Dax about halfway through the series, that would have worked a lot better for me. I think the point is that if Dax had been the centerpiece, Dax had been the character instead of Jadzia being the character, but really Jadzia was the character and Dax was kind of this characteristic of Jadzia, because it did feel a lot like, well, okay, Terry doesn't want to renew her contract, and so we've got to get somebody else in here. Let's bring her in. I never told you my Ezri story, I don't think.
Oh, I don't think so.
I moved to Japan at the end of season 6, I believe it was, of Deep Space Nine. So I didn't get to see season 7 right, you know, as it came on like everyone else. I had to get my father to send me videotapes, and he wasn't able to record the first part of that season. So the very first season 7 episode that I saw after, I guess, Sacrifice of Angels, when Jadzia is killed, was Field of Fire.
That was the one I was going to bring up, because that's one I just watched today.
And I had kind of a similar feeling that you did. You sent me a message of like, wait, now she's walking around the station shooting people, or what's going on? It was a weird way to have your first introduction to Ezri. I didn't get to see the whole transition, you know, that took place as rushed as it was.
Yeah, it's a weird episode, and I got on board with it like at the very end. Like, I think I texted you during the middle of it, and like, wait, is she really like calling forth her previous self to help her in a murder investigation?
Yeah.
And why is she doing a murder investigation anyway? But once I got my head around, okay, she's dealing with having all these past lives inside of her in kind of a way that Jadzia never did. I actually did really like it. Renee also, Maress, talks about the episode The Seventh, which I am really hoping to do soon, because it does deal with T'Pol's repressed memories, and I love that episode.
That's right. Yeah, we were going to do that episode last week, and then we switched to Similitude. So yeah, we'll get around to that possibly next go around.
Yeah,
when we get back to Enterprise,
possibly.
So thanks for your mail, Maress. We appreciate you listening. And anyone else who has comments for us, please just go over to trek.fm/contact, and you can send a message there that will come to Greg and myself. And of course, you can post to the comment threads at the end of the shows if you want to talk with other listeners as well.
Right.
Greg, let's jump into... We have a whole slate of really, really hard-hitting news today, as we were discussing in the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
And the first of these is something that we have actually not talked about in quite a while in the show, and that's Star Trek Las Vegas 2013.
Yeah, did you hear that there's like a big Star Trek convention that takes place in Las Vegas?
I heard something about that. I always thought it was one of those, you know, galactic rumors that goes around, but apparently it's real.
Yeah, I mean, at first I thought it was a Doctor Who convention, and I was actually kind of excited. But no, it turns out it's more than that. It's actually Star Trek convention. It's all about all of the Star Trek nonsense that we seem to care so much about. And they've had tickets. Well, the gold package has been on sale for a couple weeks a couple months possibly at this point. I don't think general admission tickets have even gone on sale yet.
I don't think so, but yeah, the gold package has been available for a while.
But so based on those gold package sales, which the gold package is a little pricey, let me tell you, they've actually been able to up the guest list past what was even announced right at first. Now, should we read off the cast list for Star Trek Las Vegas 2013? Do we have enough time?
I don't know if we have enough time. They don't have the full slate of captains yet. I see two captains who are still missing at this point, Patrick Stewart and Scott Bakula.
Right.
But they do have a huge slate of favorites. William Shatner, Avery Brooks, Kate Mulgrew, Jerry Ryan will be there. Mm-hmm. Frakes, McFadden, Spiner, Surtees, and Dorn. I hear they're going to reenact the season 7 love affair between Troy and Worf because it's such a fan favorite. Many of your favorite cast members, main cast members, are definitely going to be there. Now, of course, Jeffrey Combs is going to be there.
He is everywhere.
But what I'm really excited about, Greg, are some of the periphery players that they're bringing in because, you know, for the longest time, for me personally, I've always wanted to meet and have my picture taken with Victor Brandt, who played Tango Rad in the original series episode, The Way to Eden.
Well, not only that, but he was also Watson in a lot of Troyes. Let's not forget that seminal role. Lucy Liu. We've got Victor Brandt.
Exactly. And if you've wanted to meet Captain Ricks from Conspiracy, Michael Berryman will be there.
Yep. Yeah, they've got a few people. I mean, it's going to be a really big cast. One nice thing is if you stand in the autograph line for Sirik Lofton, you can actually see him for more screen time than he had on the entire run of DS9.
That's a good point. But yeah, they're really fleshing it out, and I joke about these actors who appeared in only one episode of the original series a little bit, but of course, you know, everyone in the series has their fans, mm-hmm. and many of these actors went on to do many great things outside of Star Trek. We just bring them, we just tie them into the franchise because of their one appearance. So Creation is really making a great effort to really flesh this out to show how many actors have been in the franchise and give fans a chance to meet everyone. And as Gary Berman, who's the co-CEO of Creation, said in some quotes he gave to StarTrek.com, they are looking for an even higher level of celebrity interaction for the attendees this year. And they want to kind of try to not have so much time pressure on the autograph sessions and the lines and all for the vendors.
Yeah, because that's been a complaint in the past that you sort of walk in to get your picture taken with Patrick Stewart and it's like click and you're gone. And I mean, yes, that's the point. And yes, then you've got a picture, but it'd be nice if everyone had a little bit more time to relax and see them. Not quite sure how you do that, but I'm glad they're thinking about it. And hopefully they can make this year a relaxing experience. And, you know, pay the people who were there enough to make them feel like it's really worthwhile to show up maybe for multiple autograph or multiple picture sessions.
Exactly. And hopefully they'll be able to do that. You know, he says that they want to increase the chance for fans to personally meet their favorite celebrities beyond just seeing them on the stage. So hopefully this will all play out and it'll make it a more rewarding experience for the fans who are going there and also for the actors who I think Star Trek actors are more receptive to fan interaction than the actors of some other shows. I mean, a lot of them, Jonathan Frakes, I mean, look at him. I think they just really sincerely enjoy spending time with the fans and interacting with the fans.
Yeah, I definitely think that's very true. I mean, just the bit of interaction we've had with them on Twitter or that I've heard from people that went to these conventions, they're really great folks. I've really not heard of anything bad about any of them except maybe Tim Russ's chai latte. But sometimes you need your chai latte and you don't want to wait. And I'm not going to begrudge a man for wanting his chai latte.
That's right. You need it now, right now.
Yes.
Where is that damn chai latte?
I can just walk up to him and be like, Tim, was that an emotional response?
Yes, I'm going through the pun far.
That would be a good, that'd be a good drink to have. I know they have the Warp Core Breach that you can have along with, you know, you go to your sushi place, have a barrel roll. Have a Warp Core Breach. They've also got Blood Fever right there. It's a delicious, delicious drink.
Yes. And the Ponfar Frappuccino is very yes. popular as well.
Yes, indeed.
One other thing we should mention before we wrap up Star Trek Las Vegas is that there is one fan, Judy Gebhardt, who has been heading up a Facebook campaign to try to get Whoopi Goldberg at one of these conventions.
Yes, and Star Trek fans may know Whoopi Goldberg, may possibly, by her role as Guinan on TNG. Guinan, you remember Guinan? Okay, that's Whoopi Goldberg. Okay, we're clear on that. Whoopi Goldberg is Guinan.
So that's who Whoopi Goldberg is. I had heard her name before, but okay, now I understand.
Right.
I always just thought that was Tim Meadows in drag, but apparently it's not.
No, not at all. Well, isn't Whoopi a big Star Trek fan? Why hasn't she been at a convention before?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I mean, I don't know if she's never been at a convention. I think she just hasn't been at a convention recently. I'm so disconnected from, you know, the day-to-day celebrity world of what goes on in the U.S. All I personally know is that she's on The View, or she was on The View.
Yeah, right? I'm not sure. One of those shows she either is or was on.
Right. So I don't know. Maybe she's just kind of in a place right now where, you know, that connection to Star Trek for her was 20 years ago, and she's just not there. But I know fans would love to see her because, I mean, we all love her as Guinan. And, you know, maybe this will be successful. But you can go, we'll put a link on the show page. It's a really long link. Or if you go to Facebook.com and search Whoopi Goldberg, you'll probably find this page. And you can click like. They're trying to just build up a lot of likes to kind of show fan interest to Whoopi.
Yeah, and hopefully they'll be successful because she is definitely one of the parts, one of the things that makes TNG a really great show. I'm looking forward to seeing her in Q Who on the big screen this Thursday. Because, I mean, she was missing when you watch season one. It's like, where is Guinan? So, yeah, hopefully they can bring her on.
Yeah. Well, when you watch season one now, of course, when you watched season one first run, no one said, where's Guinan?
Why do they never go to 10 forward? I don't understand. There's this whole big room and like Guinan's there bartending. You'd think they could set so many scenes there. I don't know why they haven't done it yet.
Oh, all right. So we'll put some links to all this on the show page. And again, August 8th through the 11th of next summer will be Star Trek Las Vegas, and hopefully we're going to be there too, doing our cosplay changes every 12 minutes.
Yes, I'm really looking forward to the cosplay changes.
We're not going to actually go to any sessions. We're just going to see us roaming around in different costumes throughout the weekend.
Yes.
All right. Well, what else do we have up in today's hard-hitting news, Greg?
Yes, well, I had a few times this week when I messaged you, Chris, throw out the rundown. And this was one of those cases, I believe, where ThinkGeek has announced Star Trek boxer briefs.
Now, we've all been waiting for these because, you know, when you're down in your briefs, you really want to be able to show whether you're in command or whether you're scientifically minded or whether you are an engineer.
Yes, I was thinking that this week. That sometimes when I you know, take a lady to bed, you know, I never know how I'm feeling. Sometimes I'm feeling in command. Sometimes So this allows you to have your choice. Maybe it'll even help boost your confidence. You know, you've got to do some work on the warp core, and you want to make sure you've got your red ones on, so you really are feeling that engineering instinct.
That's right. You just hope that you never find Argyle hiding in the Jeffries tube.
Yes, that can really put a wrench in things.
Now, of course, if you want to have that confidence that comes from being an engineer, it's lucky for us that these briefs from ThinkGeek are inspired by the original series.
Yes.
Because channeling Scotty, you would have that sense that you are a miracle worker. Now, if this were the next generation and you were channeling Geordi, you'd probably, you know, I don't know, end up maybe going home empty-handed for the night.
That's true, yes. Now, you definitely want to keep up that reputation as a miracle worker. And I think these boxer briefs would be exactly the way. And, okay, so it's basically, it's a pack of three boxer briefs for $29.99. So they're a little expensive. So you probably want to save them for only, you know, the most special of encounters.
I'm glad they are giving you all three divisions in one pack, though. Because like you said, you never know how you feel on a given night.
Yes. I'll have to put these, you know, in my closet right next to my Harry Potter. You know, I've got my Slytherin boxer briefs and my Gryffindor, my Hufflepuff, depending on how I'm feeling in that case. My Star Wars, you know, I've got my Rebel underpants and my Imperial underpants. Kind of pretty much however I'm feeling any day of the month, I've got an option. And that's what I really like about this modern age we live in.
If you come in with your Hufflepuff line, I'm just not taking you seriously.
No one has yet.
All right. Well, yeah, you can get these from ThinkGeek. They come in small, medium, large, and extra large. And
no comment.
And they also mentioned that they do come with a button fly. So
again, no comment. Yes.
All right. But, you know, if you're going to walk around in just Star Trek briefs and nothing else, you might get a few strange looks, and someone might tell you to please cover yourself up a little bit. And when that time comes, you need this next item from ThinkGeek, the Star Trek uniform bike jerseys.
And these look absolutely fantastic. And we've got the same thing. It comes in command or science or engineering, whatever color you feel like as you're going to go out and brave the various drivers. Drivers typically act like Klingons when you're riding your bike. So I think it might be best to go in command so you can, you know, order Worf to fire all phasers at the car as it passes by. I talked to an actual cyclist this week who said she would absolutely buy these. So I don't think these are outside the realm of plausibility, even if they are embossed with a giant Starfleet logo on the breast.
They look pretty cool, though. I mean, I could see this as like, you know, the police officer in the 2009 movie that chases young Kirk.
Oh, yeah.
As he zips across the Grand Canyon in Iowa or whatever that was.
It was the quarry or something, you know, that quarry that they've got. I don't know. I can't explain it.
It looks exactly like Iowa to me. But anyway, I can see him wearing these, though. I can see that, you know, sleek, flying down the road on your motorcycle or even, you know, even Chris Pine before he joined Starfleet as he pulls up on his bike. I could see him wearing this as well.
That's very possible. I don't know if you want to ride a motorcycle. I don't know how much protection it will be against a motorcycle accident, but it does wick moisture and it's got very sleek. And there's even a pocket in the back for you to fit your water bottle, which is very important for the Starfleet commander on the go.
Right. Now, I don't know if you saw my tweet, but I actually tweeted that picture of the water bottle because the way the picture's framed, you can't quite tell exactly where that's located.
Yes.
And it looks like it's kind of nestled up in a little crevice there. And I was just thinking, boy, that looks comfortable. I'm going to shove that water bottle right down there, sit down on my bike and go. So
I do believe it's in the back. And I think, though, the water pouch is only on the men's for some reason. The women's doesn't appear to include the water bottle pouch. But they do come in both men's and women's styles, depending on which you are, I suppose.
All right. I don't know. This is because women don't need water. These are original series. Is this like just trying to keep that 1960s view of women going where like...
I could be wrong. I could be wrong about the water bottles. Just in my brief perusal, I didn't see it. I do figure they've... they think the women should be bringing everyone tea and coffee. So why would she need a water bottle of her own? In Dixie cups, yeah. Yes.
Yes. All right. And I should say, yes, I know these are bicycle jerseys, but, you know, I'm not sure that they ride bicycles in the future. I think they're more into motorized stuff, so.
Well, you know, I was really thinking, okay, so these are great for when you're biking, you know, in summer and you need the sweat wicked off of you. But what are you going to do when it gets really cold and the snow starts falling and, you know, you still want to go out and ride your bike? This is where the Ferengi fur coat jersey really comes in handy. You zip it up. There's fur around it. It just keeps you nice and warm. It even comes with a laser whip in case a car just gets a little too close.
I was going to ask you about the laser whip part.
Oh, absolutely.
That sounds really fantastic. And I understand also that if you order within the next 5 days, you get a Ferengi tooth sharpener as a special bonus with that.
Yes, those are extremely helpful. Yes, so whether you need the Starfleet jersey in the summer or the Ferengi jersey in the winter, ThinkGeek has whatever you need. This is not a paid advertisement, by the way.
It's not. Let's be clear. No, it's not. And in both cases, they have odor-blocking material to keep you fresh all day.
Yes, because everyone knows when you're riding a bike with your female Vulcan companion, you really don't want to start sweating, or else she's just going to go in the opposite direction.
Absolutely, because humans stink.
Ah, they
just
do.
Ask DePaul. She needs a nasal blocking agent. They should put that on here. ThinkGeek, they should spray these with a nasal blocking agent.
That could be really helpful. Absolutely, yeah. They should look into doing that.
So these come in a wide range of sizes, small, medium, large, extra large, 2XL and 3XL for the largest Ferengi out there. Actually, I think the 3XL is for the Klingon representative in Star Trek V.
That makes a lot of sense, yes. Do you think they do a lot of bike riding on the planet of Galactic Peace?
Actually, I think they do. That planet is perfect for bike riding, don't you think? I bet they have biker gangs all over that planet.
You know, I'm thinking the planet of Galactic Peace has all sorts of like really hippie laws, and they probably require you to ride your bike a couple hours. It's like Mayor McGinn here in Seattle. It just forces you to ride your bike at least 2 hours a day just to make sure you're offsetting anybody who might be driving a car anywhere in the world.
That sounds about right. Yeah, I think you're right on that.
Plant a couple trees, etc. It's the way of the future.
So we'll put a link to these in the show notes if you're interested in going over there. And like Greg said, this actually is not a paid advertisement. We just like laughing at all the interesting products that come from ThinkGeek. We can't resist.
We really can't. Now, this is not from ThinkGeek, but it definitely had to make our rundown. I don't even know how to introduce these, but they're essentially little Star Trek figurines that are also USB flash drives.
That's right. Now, apparently, well, these are called Memobots, mm-hmm. and apparently this is a whole line of franchise-based USB flash drives from a company called Mimoco. And I actually had never heard of these particular ones before, mm-hmm. probably because I don't live in the U.S., but I looked on their page and they have, you know, Star Wars, they have all different franchises, but these are from Star Trek and they have Kirk, Spock, Picard, and of course, Data, because you can't have a USB drive to carry your data without actually having data.
Yes, my understanding is that Captain Kirk holds 8 gigabytes, Captain Picard holds 16, Mr. Spock holds 32, and then Data holds 64 gigabytes. Is that correct, sort of judging by their relative intelligence?
Maybe, I don't know. No, actually, I think that they are all available in all 4 sizes.
Oh, okay, I guess I misunderstood. I guess I was just making an assumption based on the characters they'd chosen. And you'd want to go with Data, right? I mean, I wouldn't trust my bits to... Well, maybe Captain Picard. I might trust my bits to him. I'd be afraid that the Spock one would keep trying to put his data, you know, into my head. Right. No, keep your Katra to yourself, man. Seriously.
And I have to tell you, I would never trust my bits to Kirk.
No. Who knows what Kirk will do with your bits?
I know. You know what Kirk does with bits. So these are, they're very cool looking. They are 2.5 inches tall by 1 inch wide. And I have a USB flash drive. I actually don't use it all that much, but sometimes if I need to shuttle some little data around, and mine's just very plain looking. But if you're a Star Trek fan, and especially if you, actually, you know what, people who maybe just shuttle documents back and forth between the office, or students who, you know, go to the library, university, and they need to carry small documents around, and they do it on USB sticks a lot. If you're a Star Trek fan, this would be a fantastic item for you to have. And as we get close to the holidays, a fantastic gift for you to give to your Star Trek friend.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a cute little thing, especially as a stocking stuffer. I'd love to have one just dangling on my keychain. I might not even ever put any data on there because I've, you know, always got my iPad with me. But they're so cute that why wouldn't you just want to have them around?
You almost could. Like the 8 gigabyte one is $20.
Yeah.
And yeah, you could use just a keychain, yeah, for decoration or something on your bag. Now, I don't think I would go with the 64 for $70. Just to get a keychain out of it, but
right, that's probably true.
You know, so
well, I don't know. Maybe if it's a Hello Kitty, one of these, maybe I'd go ahead and get the most expensive one I can because I really want to have a quality Hello Kitty USB flash drive.
We need to do a Hello Kitty. I think we did this last week, didn't we?
A Hello Kitty. We did a bit of a Hello crossover. Kitty. Yes.
For me being in Japan, you know, I'm surrounded by Hello Kitty all the time. This is a country where 40-year-old women will carry around Hello Kitty bags.
Oh, yeah.
As purses.
Easily.
So, yeah. All right. So we'll put a link to this in the show notes as well if you'd like to take a look. Looks pretty cool. And maybe even a little more advanced looking than the data storage devices that they used in the original series or even the next generation.
Does not compute. Please re-enter data. That's always what the computers sound like on the original series.
Right.
It's like they knew that they could get them to do voices, and it's not even like it's a computer voice. It's just a very dull-sounding human.
Right. Let's find the most boring person we can possibly find. Can you imagine 23rd century TomTom navigation has like the most boring voice? Turn left at Alpha Centauri.
Well,
go,
you know,
warp 2, 4, 3 parsecs. No, wait, that's Star Wars.
Yes, let's not get that confused. But you know who we would love to actually do our turn by turn navigation or be the voice of our computers is, of course, William Shatner. So I was really glad. This is another one of my iMessages. Chris, throw out the rundown. I have a new lead. Leading with it, Chateauaudry version 1.1.
Yeah, I was excited when I saw this update come out because I had fun playing with the original Chateauaudry, but it really was lacking in words. And so they listened to the users and they went through and they actually had William Shatner record a wide range of new words, more than 100, they say. And these are words that were requested by the fans. But speaking of having William Shatner doing the voice of our navigation system, Greg, I think it could lead to a lot of accidents. You know, it's like, turn left in 500 meters. And you just go like flying off into the ditch. You're just not sure. You know, like, come on, tell me, what should I do?
Well, the bad part is when he tells you to back out of your garage at impulse speed. You know, regulations clearly say thrusters only when in garage, but Shatner doesn't care. Shatner's a free spirit.
He's right, yeah. He prefers to go at 1/4 impulse power even in the garage.
Do you think that the navigation system will come with Savick saying, but regulations state, I don't listen to regulations?
I think so, yes.
Okay, should we make some Chateauaudry? Well, I've got a good one for you here, Chris. It's a little bit Christmas themed.
His ship was all mistletoe.
It's a ship on which there's a lot of kissing pretty much in all of the hallways all the time.
You know, I have one here too, which is a little bit confusing at first, but it highlights the holiday theme that they've built in to this update of Chateau Atrie.
All you horses have great ships. Ho, 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 ho.
Fantastic.
I think it's about sleds.
I thought he was going to say something about spray painting the horses.
Yeah, it's either spray painting the horses or it's something about, you know, Santa's sled. He right. thinks that the reindeer are horses. I don't know. Something like that.
You know, it's too bad they never did a Christmas-themed original series episode where they have to, you know, help Santa deliver the toys or something. Like, they go to the Santa planet and they learn that Santa's actually an alien and he's being held captive. And they just have to, you know, free him. And maybe actually they can't free him in time. They actually have to deliver all the presents themselves. I think that's really a missed opportunity by Roddenberry back in the day.
Oh, definitely is. It could be the land of misfit ensigns.
Perfect.
And, you know, Greg, in our feature today, we're going to talk about iMUD. And, of course, it's another case where they're able to confuse computers and robots by talking them to death. And in preparation for that discussion, William Shatner himself has prepared this holiday message for us.
The robots have fears of holiday eggnog.
That's perfect. That's the perfect holiday message for all of us. I think that really sums up what Christmas means to me.
In the second season of the original series, they brought back one of the favorite characters from the first season, Harry Mudd, or as Greg calls him, Henry, Harvey, Herbert, and Huey, I believe.
All the Mudd brothers.
That's right. And this was an interesting episode that was inspired in title and to some extent in story by Isaac Asimov's iRobot and the Laws of Robotics. But you might not know it from watching what happens in this episode. And to help us talk about iMUD today, we have with us our TOS editor, Landru. And Landru, as I have to always ask and make sure and confirm, are you of the body today?
Yes, I am. Joy to you, friends.
Excellent. And also back with us, we have from Dork Trek and the Mouthy broadcast, Jenny Zell. Hello, Jenny.
Hello. Thank you for having me back.
Great. We're glad to have you with us once again. So, Landru, you picked the episode today. So tell us, why did you choose iMUD?
Well, iMUD is one of the episodes that it's my favorite episode of the original series. I'm not exactly sure why.
And neither
but,
are we.
It was one of the episodes my dad had taped off of TV when I was growing up.
Interesting.
He had like four or five tapes of random original series episodes. I'm not even sure if he even liked them. They were just what was on when he was recording them. And he had a couple TNG episodes in there, like Yesterday's Enterprise and Cause and Effect. So those are my favorite Next Generation episodes so far. But iMUD, I've always thought it was really funny. I never really dug a message out of it, but I suppose maybe we can try that if Greg doesn't eat too much ice cream and get a headache.
I was having ice cream as you said that. Am I supposed to be participating in this discussion? No, I have no problem with iMUD. I'm just worried, as you say, I'm not going to have too much to say about it, aside from commenting on the Android uniforms, which must have been designed by the same guy who was involved in designing the uniforms for Starfleet in the motion picture.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
I personally found them very enjoyable.
You wish that there were more male androids?
Mm-hmm. These were definitely the inspiration for the motion picture uniforms, I would say.
They might be, yes. Well, I'm glad, Jenny, you were able to enjoy them. Maybe,
yes.
Maybe they were put in there as, you know, for women, just like the female androids were put in there for men. You know, something mm-hmm. for everyone.
Yeah, and I did like also that they you know, took the time to put nipples on the male androids that stood out through the white uniform.
Yes.
I thought you were going to comment on Shatner's nipples, because he was, of course, wearing his Enemy Within green wrap that,
that kimono shirt.
He puts it on when he's feeling extra fancy.
He was extra fancy.
My wife was worried about the wrap. She said that wraps are designed to, like, show off your cleavage, and Shatner did not need the help. It's supposed to accentuate your waist area, which he also didn't need accent in. and the big arrow pointing to his crotch. Yes. So.
Well, he does need that.
That's know. Right. Yes. When he wraps it, you've got the arrow going straight down.
Yeah.
That's good.
A lot of interesting uniform things going on. I know they couldn't decide whether... Is it Alice? I think Alice is the name of the female android. They couldn't decide if she was showing off, like, her leg, or if it had, like, a big white legging thing on top of it. Like, kept going back and forth. Like, they couldn't decide were the sensors going to just shut down production if they showed off her entire leg.
Yeah, really weird. The entire original series, like the outfits that they would design to skirt the censors, are more revealing than... Well, no, because I just watched Justice.
Well,
They're not super revealing, but they're definitely more revealing than you would expect if they were trying to get around the censors. And then there's like the whole you can't show your belly button thing that they got rid of in the third
Unless
season because belly buttons think, all right. over the place.
Yeah, what was it with belly buttons? Like, is there some sexual thing about belly buttons that I don't know that they couldn't show them? Because there's like belly button flaps going on in the first couple seasons.
Well, that was like, you know, in the early part of the 20th century, you couldn't show your ankles, and then it finally progressed to belly buttons. It's like, oh, those belly buttons are really scandalous.
So that explains why when I look at magazines, Japanese magazines from that time period, they've gone through with a little razor blade and they've actually like scraped the belly button right off of the
I thought you were going to say that in Japanese porn they've pixelated the belly buttons.
Yeah, there's a mosaic over the belly buttons. Yeah.
That must be really disappointing. It's like, oh my goodness, can't they just take the pixelation off the belly button? I'm just not getting any enjoyment out of this.
You can see everything but the belly button. Yes, you know, there's right. the tentacles and see, all kinds of things.
And I was worried that it was only the belly button, just an entire magazine of just belly buttons.
Don't go too far. Maybe in a few years after the censors die down a little bit, maybe then we'll get that belly button magazine that we've all been waiting for so long.
That's why Belly Boy magazine had to shut down publication.
Yes.
Wow.
Oh,
we're like
man.
3 minutes into it.
I know, and Charlene isn't even
no
here.
No man has gone before.
That's the thing. When you cover up the belly button, when you cover up the leg sometimes, it draws more attention. It's like, just have them wear something normal. Like, seriously, what is up with what Norman's wearing? Like, someone just wrapped him in, like, slightly stretchy fabric and sort of put a zipper up the back and said, okay, I'm done. That's good enough.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, this might be a good transition point for a topic that Landry wanted to talk about, which was the different temptations of the crew.
Yeah, I like that the androids are... I don't know if it was Mud that had prepared them or if they already had all these areas ready, but there seems to be, like, a different area designed to, like, tempt the crew to stay, and I really think that it almost worked. Like, Spock, they mentioned a library, and Mud mentioned that he'd like talking to all the androids because they all talk like Vulcans. And McCoy freaks out about the research laboratories, and Uhura's all about being... having her mind put into a robot body?
That's
I guess.
What she seemed to be. Yeah, she was really wanting to be immortal, so she'd go all robot.
But was she? Or was that was just made up to try to confuse the robots, though?
Well, early on, though, Uhura had said, like, I'm kind of interested in this whole immortality thing, Jim.
Yeah, okay.
And
that's true.
And I think that was to set up later on us thinking, wait, what is Uhura doing? But I think it was genuine when it was stated early on in the episode that Uhura was kind of like, I could kind of go along with this. Between this and Norman over there, this is kind of exciting.
She almost seemed to be the most tempted by whatever they were offering her out of everybody. You know, McCoy said, yeah, I could stay there. And, you know, I like the library, whatever. But she was like, I'm really thinking about this. Because she even said, you know, I kind of believed it myself when she told the robot that she mm-hmm. wanted to join them.
These are definitely, if we want to talk about some serious things, these are clearly early androids. Like, these are the way that Starfleet was thinking of androids until they found Data. There was a, I think it was IO9, I don't know, some article talking about, not to get on the topic, but androids and sex. And it talks about robots when it's talking about Data. And someone's complaining, no, Data's not a robot. There's a huge difference between an android and a robot. These guys are kind of more like robots. They've got very clearly programming telling them, do this, don't do this. Right. There's a hive brain where they're being controlled. They're not fully sentient, autonomous beings like we're used to now with Data or even things like the Doctor or Vic Fontaine.
True.
Yeah, that's true. These are not androids. They are robots. But they also say that they were created, their creators were in the Andromeda galaxy, and it's where these robots look completely human. You know, like with Data, he doesn't, you could tell he's mechanical, right? So at this point, they're thinking about robots as looking completely human, which is very different than what we got at some points later in Star Trek, even with
right.
with androids like Data or other things that we've seen that were more advanced, of course, than, because these are almost like dumb terminals, if, like the computer technology that was kind of popular, what, maybe like the late 90s, early 2000s, of having like dumb terminals in an office where you have a central server that actually serves up the software also. So yeah. It's not even that these computers are actually fully functional computers on their own. You kind of feel like that here, like they have to call back every time they want to process anything.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Although I did think it was interesting how they had a little flap in Norman's chest that was very reminiscent of Data. They kind of went back and did a new version of it for the Blu-rays. That kind of looks weird and space-agey, but the original was very much just like a mesh of circuits, like you'd see when you take off the top, you know, take off Data's hairpiece.
I haven't seen the original. I've only seen the enhanced Blu-ray, so...
I haven't watched the original of this in a while.
I watched it today with the original effects.
Oh, so nice. That,
to entertain us as the ship slides across the screen.
Yes. You forget how bad the effects can be sometimes.
Now, Drew, you have the Blu-rays, the actual discs, right? So you...
Yeah.
Can you switch back and forth between like the original cut and the remastered cut as you're watching the episode?
Yeah. There's a couple second delay, at least on my player. So you have to like be really quick about it if it's a really short thing. But and I also, my Blu-ray player, it's cheap, but it always has like a thing, a little like there's an alternate angle up mm-hmm. in the corner. Mm-hmm. So it'll actually come on whenever there's an alternate angle. So I can tell that something has been changed just from what's flashing on the screen.
Oh, interesting.
Which is kind of useful, but it gets kind of annoying.
Right, so it's like every time there's an effect shot, there's a little fling in the corner.
Yeah. You could tell that something new's coming up because they actually like make the cut in the scene before so that the thing doesn't flip back and forth so often. So I'm like, ooh, something new's coming.
I see. I thought it was an alternate angle, like... When Norman gets too close to the screen and it's just, you know, it's too much, you can flip to the alternate angle and you can watch the scene from behind him so it's not quite so distracting to you.
Can we just do the whole show from behind Norman, please? I do like how they did some fun stuff with the quote effects by actually getting a pair of twins. Is that the term? They got twins to play Alice, like... 1 through 249 is played by one twin and the other 250 are played by the other twin. And they do some things like where two of them are in frame and then there's a third one facing away from frame. So that's just her stand-in. You could really tell, you know, okay, there's sometimes they do an effect shot, but sometimes they're just getting away with it. And it really sells the idea that there are a lot of these female androids, although it still is like, wait, really? There's 500 Alices? All there just to please Mud all the time.
Yeah, 500 does seem like a overly large amount.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, even at your most hedonistic, you're not going to need more than...
Well, it's like with Star Trek. Like, if you watch every episode in sequence, by the time you get to the end, you've forgotten the first one long ago. So, like, how many Alices does it take before you've forgotten the first one and you really
But they're identical. You can't love one more than another. It blows up their brains.
That's
you
also
love them
true.
All at the same time. That's the point. But I would have thought that he would have go for more more variety and have more than like, three models or whatever. Have 10, have 20, and then just make 100 of each. Maybe. I mean, if you really need that many.
let's break down exactly how many different women you need and how many copies of each. Let's go ahead and...
We only saw, like, in the final scene, I think we see three different female models. Right. I mean, we mainly just see Alice through most of the episode, but then I think there are three.
There are like four or five other ones in that last scene.
I thought the most unusual bit of casting, though, was having Jeffrey Combs as the Herman series.
He is everywhere.
It was impressive. A young, young, very young Jeffrey Combs.
Yeah,
there.
I didn't even recognize him.
Yes. I was waiting for the Andorian fight scene to show up. That would have been a great time for Jeffrey Combs to arrive. I'm not sure where it would have been. Perhaps when Chekhov is talking to the two Alices about what he's going to do with them later, the Andorian could come up and fight him for their love.
Yes, thanks for bringing up Chekhov. Chekhov's temptation to stay is ladies. Or as I put, ladies. And he literally asks if they're fully functional.
Are they real ladies?
And he does this finger thing. We'll explain it to the people listening. He does the okay thing at an inopportune moment.
Yeah.
Yes.
When he's asking, so you girls are fully functional? Like,
what I'm asking is, can I... Never mind. I'm not going to take your show to that level.
It was kind of weird. And I wasn't sure when to really clue into this show because the beginning's actually kind of interesting. They've got this android who's systematically taking control of the ship. That was actually kind of cool. But then it like immediately switches gears from being this like action show with all of these different fights to being straight out comedy. Mm-hmm. And then it like tries to make a little bit of a point about like, I'm not sure you guys can tell me, maybe like human randomness or what it,
well, it's about
something like
that. Self-destructive nature of humanity.
Okay. Yes. But then it goes right back into humor until the end where you have these like crazy, like straight out of like an LSD trip. Like we're talking about Star Trek 4. Like what is going on? Like many a GIF has been created from this episode with Chekhov like jumping up and down like a jelly bean or everybody dancing together in the handheld camera and the wide angle lenses. It's like, what is the point of the episode? Like, what are you supposed to take away from this?
Well, maybe we're back into the, we don't have 50 minutes worth of an idea. And this was before the day of like the A and B plots that the rest of the mm-hmm. series is tend to have. So they've got their main plot and they've got this idea of these robots and, you know, we'll have to defeat them with the logic. But then they just have another 45 minutes of plot to work with.
Right.
They've only got 5 minutes worth of stuff that they wrote on that LSD trip.
Well, the thing about this is there's certainly 52 minutes of idea behind this where they're picking up on, like I said in the opening, Isaac Asimov's laws of robotics and picking up the idea of the self-destructive nature. And they kind of put an interesting twist on it here. If you look in what's buried everywhere here, this is what I get from it anyway, is that the laws of robotics, they state that the second one is that a robot must obey the orders given to it by human beings, except when they conflict with the first law, which is they can't allow a human being to be harmed. But these androids or these robots are obeying Mudd for all this time that he's on this planet until we get to the events of this episode. And then they say, oh, yeah, no, we were just obeying him because we were collecting information. And so then it seems like they're turning, but there are originally three laws of robotics, and then later Asimov added another one, which is kind of like the first one, but instead of a human being harmed, it applies to all of mankind, all of humanity. And he called that one Law Zero. And that's almost what Norman gets into here, because basically what Norman says is that human beings are self-destructive, and in order to not allow them to harm themselves, we are going to take over and rule them. And so there's that whole idea in here. But then it's just kind of mentioned, and then it just goes in a completely other direction. But they could have certainly made an entire movie out of this concept, I think.
Yeah, they obviously meant for that to be the point, because, I mean, the easy way out would be, we're robots, we're going to take over the universe, you know, and wipe you out because mm-hmm. you're a plague to be, you know, you're vermin. But the fact that they, you know, we're planning on leaving to serve humanity into complacency so they would stop harming themselves. I mean, they're pointting at these higher ideals, but just for 5 minutes.
Right.
Right.
And then they go back to logic being a tweeting bird.
I kind of saw it as kind of a standard theme with robot versus human stories, where, you know, no matter how strong the robot is, no matter how smart and logical it is, the human has that creative, you know, intuitive side that, you know, they figured out how to unlogic the robots, you know, by, okay, we figured out that it's, you know, it's learning from us, so let's just confuse the shit out of it until we break their minds.
I did like that. Drew, what was your term for what Kirk does here at the end of the episode?
Well, normally Kirk will stand up to the big robot or the computer controlling things, whether it's Nomad or the M5 or Landru, ironically. he drops a logic bomb where he just argues with them until they explode. But this one, they don't really argue with it. So instead of being a logic bomb, I refer them as logic grenades. They just lob a couple logic grenades, like, you know, I'm lying, you know, I always lie, I'm lying right now. It's just little small ones that needle them.
I liked how Norman's ears start like smoking as he's trying yeah. to figure
like a cartoon character.
But if you lie, then now you say you're not lying, and if you say you're not lying, then you are lying, but then that means that you're not.
My favorite scene though is the one where Spock is with the ladies, and he tries to nerve pinch one, and that doesn't work. And
right.
So he just says one, I love you, but I hate you. We're identical. I know. That's why I hate you, but I love you.
And then they just stop working.
The thing is, I was actually, I was identifying with the robots at this point in the episode. I was like, I don't know what's going on either.
I think if they remade this episode in Next Generation era during the first season, the robots' heads would explode.
Oh,
I like to imagine that they do.
Now, that is one of the things we're talking about is the sequels to this episode. Of course, we had Mud's Women, then iMud. Season 3, of course, had Mud again. The animated series, I think it was like, here's Mud one more time, something like that.
It's Mud's Passion.
Oh, of course,
actually
of course.
A real one.
It sounds like a romance novel.
My favorite, though, was the TNG, the first season TNG episode called The Naked Mud.
I was not, I got that on Blu-ray. It's not, yeah. It's not very flattering in HD.
Yeah, they actually did two of them in The Next Generation. There was The Naked Mud, and then there was Mud's Naked Women as well.
I much prefer that one.
For some reason, I didn't get to see that one when it came on because, you know, I grew up in Alabama, and the networks there, they actually refused to show Mud's Naked Women.
And then when they had, you know, they ran out of episodes and they did Shades of Mud, where it was just a clip show.
Of just Mud calling people Larry.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard this. I think Avery Brooks has talked about this one a bit at conventions. The DS9 Mud episode called Muddy Waters, where due to the orb of time, the Defiant, they actually get thrown back to Earth and they end up in Chicago in the 1940s. And Sisko and Mud, they have to actually play a blues club in order to prevent the entire Federation from never existing.
It's always that, isn't it? It's always the Federation won't exist right. unless you do this.
Yes, indeed. And really, don't forget about Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, where, of course, they have to stop the mud probe from turning the world's oceans into mud. It has nothing to do with Harcourt Fenton mud, but they just wanted to get the mud thing in there again.
It is a good one. I mean, there's that scene in Starfleet Command where they have the screens and they're tracking the mudslides all over Earth. and then the president asks, what is the overall mud coverage of the planet at this time? They say, current mud coverage is 98.6%.
And for some reason, when you read the script, every time they say mud, there's two D's, and it doesn't really make any sense. They're just talking about mud.
But my favorite, I like Voyager. My favorite is mud wrestling, where they had the WWE Voyager crossover.
Yes,
where definitely. The Rock came back and Seven, for some reason, took off all her clothes and wrestled around in mud.
Because why not?
Again, nothing to do with Harcourt Fenton mud. Just
well, this is another case of them trying. You know, you've got the Rock there for Jenny. You've got Seven of Nine there for the three of us. You've got to appeal to both sides.
Right. And then off on the side, as they're wrestling, you know, they've got the boy band playing over there for all the teenage viewers.
Yes, they do.
Those UPN executives, I mean, they understood the core of Star Trek very well.
They certainly do. Now, really, okay, so we joke about the myriad mud episodes, but there were three.
Correct.
Do you guys love Mud this much? I know that he does have a lovely Scottish brogue. I kept waiting for him and Scotty to have a Scotsman off or something. He's from New York. James Doohan's from Canada, but they both are talking about Laddie and all of that.
Yeah, if for serious, I was watching it tonight and I could not figure out why he was calling people Larry. Until Greg was like, he's Scottish, he's saying Laddie. I'm like, oh Laddie. Oh,
it was supposed to be Scottish. Laddie. I thought it was like this weird Irish thing. I don't know. I couldn't figure out what it was. Weird pirate thing, I guess.
Piratey talk.
Well, Chris, is Harcourt, Perry, Mud, whatever you call him, is he one of your favorite characters? Were you so excited that they were bringing him back for season two?
I don't know. Personally, not really as a character. And that's why when all the rumors were going around about the next JJ movie and people were talking about, oh, the villain might be Harry Mudd and it might be Jack Black playing Harry Mudd. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, God. Wait, I don't really want to see Harry Mudd as the villain in the movie. And I hate Jack Black. So if right. this is the case, how am I going to go watch this movie? Now, I don't hate Harry Mudd. He's fine as a character, but they were going to have him maybe more recurring than he even is now. And I don't know. I don't get it. I like Mudd's women, but it's not because of Harry Mudd. It's kind of the other topics that they address in the episode. And in this one, like I say, this could have been a very interesting science fiction story if they had focused on the whole relationship between robots and humans. But whenever they bring Harry on, it just turns into a giant farce, as we see at the end of this. Mm-hmm. And it's fun, but a favorite? No. And he's certainly not like Q is on The Next Generation, who yeah. is comical, but is also intellectually interesting at the same mm-hmm. time.
Exactly. Yeah. And they don't just throw Q into just some wacky story, you know, that it's not Q is comical, so we're going to make a comedy story based around him. It's a serious story where he just happens to be funny. And right. like this one, they really, you know, they really made it wacky. That's all yeah. I can say about it. Yeah. I mean, you know, yeah. the whole yeah. dancing around.
It's really weird if you think about it. TOS doesn't have very many reoccurring secondary characters. I mean, on the ship, you know, Chapel will disappear and reappear and stuff. But, I mean, from of outside influences, Mud, and I think Kor is in more than one episode. And, yeah. I mean, we're not even going to count the animated series. But, I mean, to have Harry Mudd be the only like real reoccurring villain. We never see the Gorn again. We never see the Tholians again. We never even really see the Romulans again. I mean, we're talking entire races.
Yeah, the only recurring villain is the Andorian who keeps showing up for fight scenes.
Exactly.
But yeah, it's three different Klingons in three different Klingon episodes. It's like they couldn't even make that be a recurring character. But let's make sure that Harry Mudd comes back.
I think that was somewhat due to, you know, being able to get the actor to come back in casting, though, because, I mean, there was some intention there. They wanted to have this recurring character with the Klingons, but it didn't necessarily work out.
Yeah. So I don't hate Mudd. And I do think it makes sense to have a character we know be here. Like, if it had just been an all-android planet, that would have been super boring. Like, how many times have we just seen an a computer-controlled planet? Or if it had been somebody we'd never met before, I think it would have lacked the interest of showing up and it's like, oh, Mudd, it's you, and you've got this vendetta against us, and you knew about us. Like, TOS kind of could have used more of this. I kind of want to encourage bringing back characters, because I think it did add a level of interest to this episode that wouldn't have been there without Mudd. But it is kind of like, I fill in the blank here. It's like being John Malkovich could have been one of whatever actor they got to be in it. I feel like this could have been I-Core if that was the only thing they could get.
Well, what if it had been, I mean, bringing back someone we know, what if it had been, you know, I-Edith, and it had actually been Edith Keeler here. Somehow she had been resurrected and ended up on this planet.
Or maybe Khan. It could have been Khan.
Please,
SETI Alpha 5 could have been populated by androids. They just never noticed.
I was about to say, but I didn't even want to make, because now I'm afraid J.J. Abrams is going to have ideas, and I don't want him to have ideas, honestly.
You don't want to see Chekhov, the new Chekhov, questioning the fully functional.
This maybe Alice Eve is playing Alice 0 or 1 through 500. That could make sense.
We finally know
who Alice Eve is
Alice
playing.
Alice Eve is playing Alice. Makes sense to me.
I would like to see that.
And with today's technology, you know, you wouldn't have to do their twins. Yeah. You could just have one of them and do them 500 times.
Because honestly, okay, maybe on a TV in the 60s, they're, quote, identical twins. Those sisters are not identical. I'm sorry.
No.
They're not even, I mean, they may be twins. They may look similar. They may have the same makeup. But I knew which one was which. Yes. Anyway, Khan would have been probably not the right choice either, because it's more fun to have it be somebody that we can team back up with and maybe use him to help fight back.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't see Khan doing the whole little comedy routine at the end of the episode there. I couldn't see Khan, you know, doing the fake explosive, you know, lighting the fuse. And speaking of that, I know we're going to talk about the final scene, but everyone else is doing their, oh my gosh, the explosive is going off. I'm being thrown around the room. Spock just like walks right through the middle of them and walks out the door. What was going on with Spock? Wow, that's really
screw
convincing.
You guys, I'm out of here.
He had had too much joy overloading his Vulcan brain.
Right.
I kind of wonder how much both the characters and the actors had to rehearse all these little wacky scenes that they did. You know, did the characters kind of sit back in one of the rooms and say, okay, first you're going to do this, and then we're going to, or did they just improv the entire thing?
That was my wife's question, too.
And how silly did they feel?
Like, so do you think that somebody wrote this, or did they just kind of like, do whatever you want, we'll film it?
I think it was choreographed, and then the choreographer's there and going, damn it, Dee, I told you. You spin twice and then you fall down. Are we ever going to get lunch today?
I was impressed with the whistling phasers, though. I've always been impressed by that.
I like finger phasers.
They make that sound.
You know, with the finger phasers, I, at that exact moment, and I don't even know why, but I did finger phasers at the screen, and then they did it. I don't even remember seeing iMud before, but maybe something subconsciously has put the finger phasers in my head, because I was finger phasering along with the best of them.
You just wanted to put Scotty out of his misery.
Yes.
It just seemed natural.
I think that Think Geek needs to actually make finger phasers.
I think so.
They look like hands, and they make the whistling sound when you press button.
I did like how Scotty gets killed, and then they like just wait a little while, and Scotty just jumps back up, and he's
jumps
fine.
Right back up.
Yeah. He's scared of the bomb. It brought him back to life.
Right. Reminded me of like, I don't know, like a middle school play where someone's like supposed to be dead, but then it's like, okay, it's time for the song, and we need all the kids, so you're alive again.
Exactly.
I got better.
A middle school play. Okay.
You even get that on TOS, though, where you have red shirts who die in episodes, and then the character's back, you know, like yes. 6-7 episodes later. They're back on the ship again.
Nobody noticed.
That was my brother. That wasn't me. No.
Right.
Inza DeSalle, aren't you dead?
No.
No.
That was my brother.
Another thing that I got from this that we should talk about, Greg, you mentioned earlier that there's a hive mind going on here. And as I'm watching this, I can't help but feel like this is an early version of the Borg in a way. Because, and of course, I don't mean that these robots led to the Borg and you know, they're from Andromeda, whatever. But it's just the concept of them. You've got, they're on this mission to take over the galaxy. They want to, in their eyes, save civilizations from themselves. And they clearly have this hive mind. They're clearly some kind of drones. And they have to call in this case, Norman, because there's only one Norman. And I was thinking, you know, like, if I have to be strapped down to a table and seduced by the leader of one of these collectives, I'm going to choose the Borg Queen over Norman, I just have to say.
That's probably but, true.
Though it's obvious that Norman is fully functional.
Obviously. Yes. Very obvious. But did you guys get the same vibe, though, that the similarities between these robots in the brief time that we get to see them in this episode and then what we know of the Borg later on as a concept?
No, I didn't see that at all.
Really? Interesting.
That is something we keep saying every time there's a hive mind. That's I think logical. It's just hive minds are used a lot on Star
but
Trek.
It's not just hive minds. They're on a mission to conquer the galaxy and to rule over other civilizations in order to make them better in their eyes.
Hmm. That is true. And the thing is, and I guess it is similar. I got so lost in the wacky third act that I'm still... This is a case of... There's like a germ of an idea there. They were controlled like by a single computer, right? Like that computer was somewhere on the planet and it was controlling all of them. That was the idea.
And that Norman was the like the interface between the okay. master computer and them or something.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I just... I was never quite sure what their motive was because they do start out saying... We just want to talk to some humans and study them. And then they make this huge leap from that to, okay, now we need to take your ship away and leave you all here so that we can save you from yourselves. It's like, that's kind of a, for beings that are supposed to be completely logical, that's not quite the most logical thing you could do. Maybe to help humans, you should like have a treaty and like have some meetings and some conference calls and... write mm-hmm. some books on the subject. Like maybe enslaving and stuff isn't the best way to go about reforming a race.
It was a kinder, gentler enslavement, though. Like yeah. we're going to serve you and control you by doing your bidding, I guess.
They assume that the entire galaxy would just be like, yeah, sure, come on in. You can do my laundry.
Right.
I mean, really, if I had one of those robots come into my house right now, I have two piles of laundry that they can do. That's fine.
they were reminding me of the Ood from yes. Doctor Who.
Allons-y!
We are here to serve you until we turn on you and kill you with our laser orb thingies.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
again,
they don't
I
have
would...
the obvious red eye.
Yes.
The big red yeah. glowy eyes were helpful with the Ood.
I would yes. have an Ood butler if one came to my door and said, I'm here
There's
to serve
an Ood
you.
On the
Great.
Loo.
Well, one other idea I had about the Borg connection here, though, is that I thought it would be cool if in the Next Generation, if the Borg, if they all the drones wore these little necklaces that had their designation, you know, like 2 of 7 on it or yes. such. And every time they need to check with the collective... It flashes and they have to call back. Because then when you shoot your phasers at them, you shoot the first time, it hits them and kind of, you know, gives them a little flesh wound. And then they have to call the hive to find out what they should do to adapt. And you could get a few more shots in while they're getting the information back. I think it would be a little easier to defeat them that way.
I may have to Photoshop a picture of Jerry Ryan with a 7 of 9 necklace.
And do their necklaces match with the other ones, like the little best friend necklaces? Like, oh, look, this is 5 of 9, and look, we match up.
Exactly. I am waiting for ThinkGeek to start selling these. You know, you can buy like a mood ring that changes color depending on your mood. This one can blink at different frequencies depending on how confused you are.
Mine would be just be flashing like a strobe.
As long as it makes the beep, 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 beep.
And Greg, I'm just waiting for ThinkGeek to call us up and sponsor the show, because I think about 60% of the show today has been us talking about ThinkGeek, and I think we deserve something for that.
Yes. Okay, so the one android we haven't talked too much about is the wife. Stella. Harcourt Fenton Mudd, have you been drinking again? Why? A couple of you guys. You guys are married, right? Would you construct an android version of your wife to follow you around on a spaceship?
Specifically to nag me?
To nag you to death?
I'm divorced twice, if that answers your question.
That means you have 2 androids in your house?
Yeah, 2 androids, I'm sure. Locked away in a closet. Anytime you're feeling, you know, like you've got your head up against a project, it's like, I just don't know if I can continue, you know, this project. You just bring your husbands out of your exes out of the closet.
They sit on the
Jenny
couch.
Zell,
they drink beer and
have you been drinking
belch.
Again?
Shut up!
I'm impressed that he was able to describe his wife well enough for the androids to build a replica of her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, how long did it take Harry to say, oh, she's got big red hair and she's evil looking?
I like the fact that she has pointy hair, because, you know, that was his description of her. Her hair, it's like horns when she comes after me.
Her eyes are kind of cross-eyed. Not entirely sure why.
She almost looked like a Disney character, like a human version of a Disney character. And I don't know which one, but... And I kind of wondered how much of a caricature of the real wife she was. Like, did that really look like her? Is that like, she has this really pointy looking face and like this weird hairdo, you know, and it's just, you know,
that's
just
a good point.
Maybe that's what it is.
Accentuated.
Maybe she really looks like Majel Barrett, and just the way that he described her to the android, she came out looking that way.
I like how she kind of stands there and rotates like she's in Chuck E. Cheese or the Country Bear Jamboree.
Yes, that's what I was
thinking. She kind of points out, and then he tells her to shut up, and her arm goes.
Well, she's kind of like at a carnival where you put your quarter in, and it tells you your fortune. That's what she was reminding me of.
Like in Big.
Yes, exactly.
The fortune teller in Big.
When Disney buys Star Trek, as they've done with Star Wars, that's when we will actually see Stella in the Country Bear Jamboree at Disneyland.
Yes, but when the Pirates of the Caribbean break down, they don't try to nag you.
No, but we will see Harry Mudd sitting there drinking along the side, especially that part where the boats stop for about 20 minutes because the conveyor belt's not working properly. Every
you just
time.
See him lifting the bottle repeatedly.
Yes, that's right. That's him.
Gulp.
As the buildings burn in the background.
Jack Sparrow and Harry Mudd.
Chekhov keeps making the okay symbol.
While 500 Alices dance around. They go in the house and out the door and in the house and out the door.
We are here to please you.
That's right. And you sit there for 20 minutes and you just hear that. We are here to please you. We are here to please you. And Chekhov's doing the little hand thing. And then you go home that night and it's like, that's all you dream about that night.
I'm going to have nightmares.
It's a small world,
actually.
Yeah.
Mostly Chekhov, like, doing his little... It's like a little... Is this supposed to be like a Russian dance of some sort where it's like...
Yes.
Feet are like pointing together?
He's doing like a Kazakh dance or something, but very, very badly. Yes.
Very badly. It's like, I know GIFs haven't been invented yet, but oh God, they will be. Just for this.
People were like, I would love to watch this. Just one thing on a loop forever and ever.
And if only there was some sort of website where I could post it along with other people posting their GIFs.
I don't even know what a website is.
Yes. I must invent the internet so that I can share this loop of Chekhov doing a Kazakh dance with the rest of the world.
Yes.
So Al Gore is a Star Trek fan.
Yes.
And then I must start a podcast so that I can use it as a meme every time someone mentions this.
Yes. I'm okay.
This is a single episode is responsible for the future. Yes.
So this is a very, very silly episode of Star Trek. And I have a question. Do any of the other series... Do we grade them on a curve? Is I guess my question. Like, if there was an episode of Next Generation this silly, would we let them get away with it? Like, what is it about this show in particular that lets us sort of have fun? Like, I enjoyed all 50 minutes of iMUD, whereas I turn on DS9 Season 7, I'm like, oh, they have not characterized Ezri exactly correctly, and I don't like how this scene doesn't exactly... It's like... I'm analyzing these shows on a completely different level, apparently.
That's right. Greg is watching Season 7, and he sends me a message, and he goes, oh, great, now some gangster has taken over the casino in the Hollow Suite, and Ezri's a maid, and it's bada-bing, bada-bang. And I'm like, no, that's a fun episode. Oh, well, I don't know. You know, don't they have a war to worry about? This is Greg, well, okay. DS9 Maybe Season 7.
Yes. Chris is throwing me under the bus here. Where thank you. But, well, okay, TOS, there wasn't a war going on, so maybe that's a difference. Like, TOS, it was just them by themselves. They didn't really have much to worry about. They could have some fun, and there's nothing in the back of my mind thinking, yeah, but aren't the Breen, like, sitting at the border just waiting to attack anytime you let your guard down for a moment?
I think a lot of it is the 60s. Mm. I think that by the 80s, an episode like this wouldn't have... it's interesting. I've been watching Deep Space Nine, Next Generation, and the original series, like this week, just going back and forth. And it's really... The contrast between them is quite intense. But... I mean, some of this early TNG stuff, I'm in the first half of the first season watching my Blu-rays, but it's pretty funny, but not for the right reasons. Justice was hilarious, but I don't think it was supposed to be.
Right.
Right.
But I think an episode like this that is just goofy, I think we're okay with it more because it's Shatner. It's the 60s. Mm-hmm. It's what we expect from that era, right, of television and that era in general.
Yeah, that's one of the things I love about the original series is that it is a little campy and it's over the top quite a lot. And I noticed that when I was, you know, as we're going through Dork Trek and, you know, they're asking me to rate each episode. Something that would be a good episode in season one, if they put that same episode in like season five or six, it's going to get a lower rating from me. You know, something from season one might be a 7. And if that same episode was in five, I might say, it was okay. It was a, you know, 4. So I do have a curve, you know, because the standard has been raised at some point.
And that explains how every episode is still a 6.5.
Exactly.
Across the board.
Eventually, every curve levels out.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know if I don't know if I grade them that way, because I tend to grade them largely on the point of the episode or the message of the episode, not necessarily the production value of the episode. And I don't necessarily penalize an episode for being silly if I feel like that's the point of it. So from series to series, yeah, I don't know. I think I kind of am more, kind of treat them all the same. And even with The Next Generation, a season one episode that has a really good message to it, I might rate just as highly as I would if it were in a later season. Even though from a production standpoint, there is definitely a clear difference. And I know what you mean, Jenny, that in the middle of, say, season five, some of those season one episodes would feel like a huge letdown based on the material that's surrounding it. Definitely.
I guess that does answer my question to some extent. I guess I am glad that Star Trek has this wide range in types of episodes. If it was all, you know, episodes like Waltz or Chain of Command, I suppose it wouldn't be the show that we like. But I mean, did you guys, I said I enjoyed watching iMUD. Did you guys enjoy it other than Landry, who's already proclaimed this as the best Star Trek has to offer?
I did not say that.
I did actually. I enjoyed this episode. I'm not sure whether I like this one or MUD's Women better comparing the two. They were kind of good in their own way. I mean, because this one was wacky and it was just fun to watch, and I, you know, take it for what it is. So I did enjoy it. Don't think I call it my favorite, though.
Yeah, I enjoyed this episode as well because it is silly, very silly, but it embodies the original series for me. The original series, it has its very serious moments, you know, like The City on the Edge of Forever. But there's also just a lot of really, really wacky stuff. You know, a few months ago in here, we did Gamesters of Triskelion, which in its own way is almost just as silly as this. I mean, you've got Lady Gaga fighting Kirk on some planet.
And an Andorian.
And an Andorian for no apparent reason. So, yeah, I don't know. You know, Harry Mudd is a good character. And I think that a lot of the characters, Spock, Scotty, everyone, are kind of, they're in form in this episode. So, yeah, I enjoy it.
Okay, so you'd say maybe 9 junks out of 10?
Oh, are we already rating the episode?
I think so. I think it's about time to rate the episodes. Right. I was actually, in all seriousness, going to give this episode 5 blinky light necklaces.
Okay. Well,
I'm just going to give it 500 nagging wives.
Oh, that's going to really throw off. I don't know how they're going to figure that one out.
I think I'll give this one 7 android women. Confused, okay. Android women, no less.
All right. I think I will give this one 7 wreaths of pretty flowers, which smell bad. So I guess we have run our course through iMUD, I suppose.
You might say that we've tracked through the iMUD. And we've left iMUD all over the carpet. Now our wives are going to have to clean it up.
I know.
Our Android servants will do it. Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. I always get in trouble for tracking through the iMUD, but yeah.
I have an iMUD. Came out from Apple. You know, it's really cool.
That's
the second generation iMUD. It's much thinner.
I traded in my iMUD for an Android. Oddly enough.
Winner. Good night, everybody.
This has been a fun, if unusual, discussion about the original series. So, all right. Well, let's, before we completely wrap up here, how about Jenny? Tell everyone where they can find you around the internets.
I'm all over the internet. I'm on Twitter at Jenny_Z. I just threw the underscore in to confuse people. I'm on Mouthy Broadcast. It's kind of a new just comedy podcast with me and my friends. And I do Playing Doctor, the Doctor Who review podcast, and Dork Trek, the TNG podcast. So that's
You need to do a few podcasts there, Jenny. Why are you just sitting around all the time?
And actually, I had somebody approach me about another one, and I'm like, I can't. No, stop pushing them on me.
Oh, goodness. All right. Well, Landru, of course, everyone can find you at Trek FM, but what if people want to talk to you somewhere else?
They can talk to me somewhere else or anywhere at 005, DOUBLEOFIVE. There's not an H in there. Or a zero. They can find me that on Twitter, Gmail, Google Plus, Friendster, Napster, MySpace.
You still have your old 005 CompuServe account?
Yeah, of course.
Juno, but not Facebook.
AOL, do you have your old Continuum Facebook account? What was Continuum? I think Continuum was on MSN, right?
Yeah, that was an MSN.
Actually, you got that old account.
GeoCities.
Yeah. Oh, I bet you've even got your old 005 Q-Link account back from the late 80s, or the early 80s, don't you?
Yes, of course.
Drew just dials into Master Control whenever he wants to get online.
Yes, I would like to play a game. Come on, let's just go.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us today, guys.
Well, Chris, that was some delicious ice cream that I had while we were recording that podcast. Not much to say. I actually had more to say about the sexy androids than I thought I was going to. So I'm so glad I brought the ice cream along as well, though, because I think what you need to get through a TOS episode like this is like a lot of chocolate ice cream.
Well, I hope all of our followers on Twitter enjoyed the photo of you eating the ice cream that I tweeted out during the show.
I hope so. I hope that brings people in. People see the image. You're like, oh, I wonder what this episode is going to be like. I bet it boosts our listenership by 2 or 3 listeners every week.
It probably will. You know, we've had some people who say that they don't want us to drink during the show. So instead, we'll just start eating ice cream. And
there we go. Know,
I know we might get a little bit, you know, chunky by Ready Room 150, but hey, you know. Well, at least we won't be drunk and talking about Star Trek.
Yes, I'll start. Episode 1, I was Chris Pine. Episode 150, I'll be Bill Shatner. It's the progression. I'm not sure. I wonder.
In generations.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I wonder if we compare Drunk Greg to Sugar High Greg, if anyone can even notice a difference, honestly.
I don't know. We need to get Char on and compare Drunk Char to Sugar High Char.
I definitely think we should.
A lot of shouting will still be going on, I think.
Give me the spoon, Mother Beer! Ah, Char. We love you, Char.
All right. But it was fun. It was fun to talk about iMUD. Great, fun episode of TOS. I think we need to pick a serious episode of TOS, though, soon. I feel like we always do humorous episodes when we do TOS. And TOS does have its serious moments, so maybe we should highlight that.
Yes, it definitely does have more than like 2 minutes of seriousness per episode. So, yeah, we'll have to see what we picked. But there's a lot of TOS, and I think we tend to steer towards the more fun ones because we're looking for some lightness after DS9 and then Enterprise. But yeah, there's some meaty TOS.
There definitely is. Well, let's tell everyone, Greg, where they can find us if they want to send us a message and share their thoughts on our show today, on iMUD, or on how they plan to utilize their Think Geek Star Trek boxer briefs. You can go to trek.fm/contact and send us a message there. That will come to Greg and me. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, on Google Plus at hyperchannel/trekfmgplus, on ADN under username trekfm, and of course on Twitter under username trekfm, where Greg, Char, Landrew, and myself are always tweeting. And Greg, I believe, rumor has it anyway, that people can find you on Twitter as well.
Yes, you can find me there at Greg Harbin. That's GREGHARB as in boy, IN, where I am slowly coming around on DS9 Season 7 as I've entered that final stretch of 10 hours that finishes out the show. So, two things this week. One, cheer me on as I finish DS9, and two, help me figure out what I'm going to watch next. Because it was TNG, and now I'm into DS9, and I'm not really sure, should I go on to Voyager? What exactly should I do next? So please, shout me your suggestions, even if they're not Star Trek. I just need another another show to jump into once I finish DS9.
Bosom Buddies, Greg. Bosom Buddies.
I have to check to see if that's on the Netflix.
All right. Well, you can find me on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's Brian with a Y. And I'm, of course, tweeting about Star Trek as well as art, design, Japan, music, college football, all kinds of things. So give me a follow. Send me an at reply. Let me know you followed. I love to chat. I don't always see everything that flies by on the timeline or who follows me when. I'm not one of those people who tracks the number of followers and who's unfollowing or following me all the time like some people do. So if you follow me, send me an at reply, say hello, and I'll chat you up. We should also remind everyone to go to the website, trek.fm, check out all the other shows. The network's been growing by leaps and bounds. It's amazing. I don't know if you realize this, Greg. We actually have 10 active shows on the network now.
Yeah, that's quite impressive.
So anything you want, whether it's Star Trek discussion like this, talking about episodes, talking about periphery topics, talking about science, talking about the creative work of people who have worked on Star Trek beyond Star Trek, we've pretty much got everything covered now, books, comics as well. So just go to trek.fm/PD. That's the short link to the podcast's directory page, and that will let you jump off to all the different shows. And you'll find us in iTunes and on Stitcher. And just give a listen and share your thoughts with us. All right, Greg. Well, it's time for me to go. I'm going to wander off because, you know, I have a date with Alice 447.
All right, Chris. I think it's time to stick some invisible explosives in it. Because the Ready Room is done. There we go.
Picard's Santa Teddy.
The android's too much junk pants.
Man, that Norman in those pants.
You just know that Jim got back, you know, James Tiberius Kirk, Jim. When he went right back to the guys designing the uniforms. He's like, I saw this planet. You would not believe what they had, what the androids got to wear.
I want that when I'm an admiral.
I want that for everyone. I want everyone from the cadets up to the admirals to be showing their junk as prominently as possible. Look, Starfleet only has so many assets. We have to make sure we put our best ones forward.